we're on chapter 16. Kind of interesting. David is facing the consequences of his actions. As always, we don't get away with nothing, and I guess the question is this: do you really want to? Do you want to get away with it? Because getting away with it doesn't do anything for you. If we're here to learn, and if we're here to mature, and if we're here to die to self as much as we can before we see Jesus and see him as he is and become like him, it's not a challenge to God. And I say this with great trepidation, that do you really want to get away with anything? God is just, and he has lost two sons already, and his third son has rebelled against him, and that's where we are. David is heading out of town. He's heading out of Jerusalem because his son is coming up from the south. He went down to Judah, picked up the armies down there, and they're heading north, and David is scooting out of town, mostly to save the town and to save the people. Jerusalem is a great defensive position. It would have been a great place to stand and fight. But to save the city and to save the people, David heads out. And he's heading over to, I can't remember the name of the town, but it's the same town Saul went to. It's the same town everybody ran to when things were bad, because it's a nice fortified town. It's across the river. It's over to the east. It'll be in here. Anyway. Now when David had passed a little beyond the summit, behold, Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth. Ziba is the dude that David put in charge of Mephibosheth's holdings. Mephibosheth is the son of Saul, of Jonathan. He's crippled. And David had made an oath to that he would take care of his family, and he does. Mephibosheth is a pretty cool dude. He doesn't bother anybody. He's very humble. But David gave Saul's holdings to him. And these were already being farmed by Ziba, who was a very loyal servant of Saul's. Then he said to Ziba, if you'll remember, you and your sons will take care of this property for Mephibosheth, which is a hard pill to swallow. And the guy says, okay. But yet Mephibosheth stays in David's palace. So Mephibosheth doesn't really need this, but this guy and his whole entire family are working for this kid. You know, and it sort of comes up here. So as David's leaving, this Ziba met him with a couple of saddled donkeys, and on there were 200 loaves of bread, 100 clusters of raisins, and 100 summer fruits, and a jug of wine. The king said to Ziba, why do you have these? And Ziba said, the donkeys are for the king's household to ride, the bread and the summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine is for whoever is faint in the wilderness to drink. The king said, where is your master's son? Where's Mephibosheth? His master would have been Saul. And Ziba said to the king, behold, he's staying in Jerusalem, for he said, today the house of Israel will restore the kingdom of my father to me. Most people believe this is an outright lie, that Mephibosheth never did this. This guy just wants his chance. He sees his opportunity to play a hand. David's on the run, but he knows that God has always been with David. Every time David fought a battle, he won. He has Joab with him, who's never lost a battle. He has his 600 mighty men. I mean, he may be leaving, but he is quite a force to deal with. So what he does is he plays his cards, and he goes and just showers David and the guys that are leaving with all these goods for them to sustain themselves. And David says, well, where's Mephibosheth? And he goes, he's waiting for, you know, Absalom to come up so he can, which he lies, because he wants that land that he's been working, that he has worked for his entire life. Okay, I understand his problem, but God, we should never do things this way. Trust the Lord to do it. Being political doesn't always work. Do what's right. Do it because it's right. And whatever happens is God's business. But anyway, he plays his hand. So the king said to Ziba, behold, all the belongings of Mephibosheth is yours. And Ziba said, I prostrate myself. Let me find favor in your sight, O Lord the king. So in this moment, just by bringing him a couple of donkeys worth of food, he gets all of that land. And we're talking substantial holdings. Now, this only happens if David comes back. So he's gambling here. Mephibosheth is crippled. he would have a hard time running away with, just so if we remember that, you know, this column that's heading out of Jerusalem, he really couldn't have kept up with it. I mean, there's nothing he really could have done. Anyway, when King David came to Bahurim, behold, there came out of there a man of the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera. And he came out cursing continually as he came. He threw stones at David and all the servants of the king David, and all the people and all the mighty men were at his right hand and at his left. And Shimei said when he cursed, get out, you man of bloodshed and worthless fellow. The Lord has returned upon you all the bloodshed of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned, and the Lord has given the kingdom into the hand of your son Solomon. Behold, you are taken in your own evil, for you are a man of bloodshed. There is great truth to that. David is a man of bloodshed. Remember, he is not allowed to build the temple because of the bloodshed, but that's not what he's talking about. He's talking about evil bloodshed. This guy is from Saul's family. He still believes that David usurped Saul. Saul died in a battle that David wasn't even in. So, but what he's saying is somebody from Saul's house should have been the king, not you, is what he's saying. And, of course, this all goes back also to the treatment of Uriah the Hittite, being a man of bloodshed. Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said to the king, why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over now and cut off his head. There. But the king said, what I have to do with you, O son of Zeruiah, if he curses, and if the Lord has told him, curse David, then who shall say, why have you done so? And David said to Abishai and to all his servants, behold, my son who came out for me seeks my life. How much more now this Benjamite? Let him alone, let him curse me, for the Lord has told him to. Remember, David is a prophet. The Spirit of the Lord is on David. He is indwelling David. And David, when he speaks, speaks prophetically. David knows this. God tells David, I told him to do this. Perhaps the Lord will look on my affliction and return good to me instead of cursing this day. So David and his men went on the way, and Shimei went along on the hillside parallel with him. As he went, he cursed and cast stones and threw dust at him. So all the way out of town, this guy is, I mean, he's riding with an army. And this guy, it's like something out of a Monty Python movie, you know, like with the French up on the castle. And he's like, I'm being oppressed, that sort of thing. And David stops anybody from doing anything. And David is well aware of what's happening. This is in hindsight where we can look back and see that Nathan's prophecy is being fulfilled. David knows Nathan's prophecy is being fulfilled. The turmoil will never leave your house. And David made his own judgment, fourfold he will pay, you know, so he's going to lose four sons for the one life he took. David is well aware of this, and David knows this is what comes with what he did. A lot of people can't do this. A lot of us could say, yes, I was wrong, forgive me, but we buckle when the price for the wrong comes, when you have to pay the price. David doesn't. David just endures the indignity and says, yes, it's true. This is me. I am this. You know, I killed a man, you know, to sleep with his wife and some other stuff. So, and the king and all the people who were with him arrived weary and refreshed themselves there. Now, I know I told you this before, but this Shimei, I don't know if we'll get that far today, but when David wins the battle and he's coming back down the same road, David, my buddy. And Dave says, let him alone. And this just breaks my heart, but on his deathbed, David pulls Solomon aside and says, kill him. Remember Shimei who came out and cast, I mean, as he's dying and he's giving his final instructions to Solomon, he gives him two instructions, and one of them is to kill him, and the other one is to kill Joab. Because Joab ain't nothing but a problem. You know, it's the deal we make with people who can help us. And I don't know if you've ever been allied with someone, either politically or in an office or something, who has something to offer you, but you don't really like how they are. And you're stuck with that dilemma. You know, yes, they can help me, but I don't like them. They're not right. You know what I mean? And you're stuck, well, what do? They're offering me what I want. So I guess the question is, as always, what do you really want? Do you want to be right? or do you want to get something else? What do you want the most? Do you want the most to be right? Then there's never an issue. Joab is a thorn in David's side the entire time, and it comes up again. And however, everything he does works. He's that guy, he's David's pit bull. If something really needs done, hey, Joab, go do the okie dokie. And Joab, he has a moral flexibility that allows him to do anything. He doesn't care. Yeah, I'll kill women, children, dogs, puppies. I don't care, you know. And this is all coming together. All of these things are coming together. Absalom's coming north. Joab's leaving with David. It's just becoming a quagmire. And it said, Absalom and all the people, and the men of Israel, and all Jerusalem, and Ahithophel with him. And Ahithophel was David's lead counselor. Remember, he was Uriah's father or grandfather. Anyway, but he joined up with Absalom. So David lost his words were as the words of God. In other words, he was an extremely wise man. This was the guy that David prayed, Lord, make his counsel false. Because David did fear Absalom. David feared this guy. Because everything he ever told David was right and it worked. So he comes in and he's coming with David's chief counsel, which means something to the people in Jerusalem that this guy's with them. And the people are getting about. Now it came about that when Hushai the Archite, David's friend, came to Absalom, and Hushai said to Absalom, this was the guy, if you remember, David said, don't come with me, but go back into Jerusalem. This is David's inside man, along with the chief priest. And so he does what he's told, and he goes to Absalom, long live the king, long live the king. Absalom said to Hushai, is this your loyalty to your friend? Why did you not go with your friend? So he knows that this is his dad's friend, and he goes, dude, why are you doing this to me? Because why aren't you with my dad? And he said, then Hushai said to Absalom, no, for whom the Lord, this people, and all the many have chosen, his I will be, and with him I will remain. So what he says to him is, well, God chose you, so that's why I'm here. I'm loyal to whatever God says. Well, he's lying. Besides, whom should I serve? Should I not serve the presence of his son? As I served with your father's presence, so that I will be in your presence. So what he's saying is, hey, you know, I have no issue with you. You're your dad's son. This is lineage. You're the next one in line. I don't have any issue with this. So he says, God wants to do it. It's politically right, is what his answer is. Then Absalom says to Ahithophel, give your advice. What shall we do? Ahithophel said to Absalom, go into your father's concubines, who he left to keep house. Then all of Israel will hear that you have made yourself odious to your father. The hands of all who are with you will also be strengthened. So what Ahithophel tells him to do, and remember, oh, I'm also finished this. So they pitched a tent for Absalom on the roof. How apropos, this was the roof that David was on when he looked over and saw Bathsheba. This was his roof of sin. So, and Absalom went into his father's concubines in the sight of all of Israel. I mean, this is so far from our world. He pitches a tent on the roof of the palace, and he brings up these 10 women, and he sleeps with each of them, one at a time, one after. That would have took me 14 weeks, by the way. But apparently, in like a day or two, this guy... So, and everybody does it. Now, there's a reason for this. What it's saying is, this is final. This is what it says, odious. There's no going back. This is... Nobody could sit and wonder, is he going to make peace with David? And if I back him, when David comes back, am I in trouble? What they're looking for is clarity. And this is clarity. This is, oh, this ain't ever being fixed. This is like the worst thing you could possibly do. And it right out in the open, I mean, everybody's standing around watching the tent, you know, and I guess the tent's rocking or something. But they know. You know what I'm saying? And like I said, this is the very roof that David, don't ever doubt where David sinned. David sinned on the roof when he said, I'm going to do, once you say, I'm going to do this, you've sinned. Everything that happened after that was just proof that he sinned. You know, the adultery itself, the sin had already occurred. Apropos, in poetic justice from the Lord, that right in the same spot, this is what happens. Extremely insulting. The advice of Ahithophel, which he gave in those days, was one who inquired of the word of God. So was it so was all the advice of Athropel regarded by both David and Absalom. It was crude, but he was right. It did settle the issue. I'm the king, these are mine, and we are just, it's over. There will be no coming back together between me and David. Support me. You don't have to worry about David coming back and then, because you supported me, having troubles. So this is it. Okay. Furthermore, chapter 17. Furthermore, Athropel said to Absalom, please let me choose 12,000 men that I may arise and pursue David tonight. He's right. This counselor says, let's get him now while he's still on the road. Which is, and 12,000 men is a lot of men, and I will come upon him while he is weary and exhausted and terrify him, so that all the people who are with him will flee, and I will strike down the king alone. And I will bring back all the people to you, and return of everyone depends on the man you seek, and all the people will be at peace. So what he says is, let me go up. They're tired. Let me take warriors. They're walking with family. They've got kids with them. Let me go up with 12,000 men and just kill the king. And then we'll have all these mighty warriors on our side. Let's not, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater. And a very good plan. It's what should have been done. And Absalom says, cool. And Absalom says, now call Hushai, the Archite, who also, and let us hear what he has to say. Now, this is David's man that David sent. He is doing what David sent him to do. David's wisdom in political matters is outstanding. He knows exactly what to do. So he sends his man, and here he is. He's in this beautiful little spot. And Hushai came to Absalom, and Absalom said to him, Ahithophel has spoken thus. Shall we carry out his plan? If not, you speak. So Hushai said to Absalom, this time and advice of Ahithophel is given is not good. Moreover, Hushai said, you know your father and his men, and they are mighty men, and they are fierce, like a bear robbed of her cubs in the field. Your father is an expert in warfare and will not spend the night with the people. Behold, he is now hiding himself in one of the caves or in the other places. And it will be when he falls on them at the first attack that whoever hears it will say, there has been a slaughter among those who follow Absalom. And even the one who is valiant, whose heart is like the heart of a lion, will completely lose heart. And all of Israel knows that your father is a mighty man and those who are with him are valiant men. But I counsel that all of Israel shall surely gather to you, from Dan even to Beersheba, as the sand that is by the sea in abundance, and that you personally go into battle. So we shall come to him in one of these places where he can be found, and we will fall on him as the dew falls on the ground, and of him and of all the men who are with him, not even one will be left. And if he withdraws to a city, then all of Israel shall bring ropes to the city, and we shall drag it into the valley, in other words, pull the wall over, until not even one small stone is found there. And Absalom and all the men of Israel said, the counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel. This is exactly what David prayed for. That Ahithophel's counsel would seem like foolishness, though it was exactly right. It was strategically and tactically the right thing to do. What he's telling him is, let's wait a while. Gather everybody together. What he's doing is giving David time to go out and establish himself in a stronghold, you know, while he's not on the road. And he says, no, this is, and then the glory will be, and you should lead the attack. Then everybody will know you're a mighty man. Thankfully, this guy's there. God knows what he's doing. Because the other one probably would have worked. Now everybody's going, let's do that. Then Hushai said to Zadok and Abathar, these were other David's two other inside men that he sent back. Remember, they tried to go with David with the Ark of the Covenant, and David sent them back. So these three hook up, as they were told to do. This is what Ahithophel counseled Absalom, the elders, and the elders of Israel, and this is what I've counseled. Now therefore, send quickly and tell David, saying, do not spend the night at the fords of the wilderness. By all means, cross over, or else the king and all the people who are with them will be destroyed. Now, Jonathan and Ahimaaz, whatever that guy's name is, are staying at En-Rogel, and a maidservant would go and tell them. These two are Zadok and Abathar's sons. So here's how it goes. Hushai is in the palace. He goes and tells these two. These two send maidservants to tell them two, who are supposed to go and tell David. So David already has an information channel that comes straight from the throne room, straight up to him. He said, now John, okay, and it's good to tell the king, they would go and tell the King David, for they could not be seen entering the city. So they couldn't come and get the information from their fathers, so they had these young ladies take the information to them where they were hiding, because if they were seen coming into the city, they would know something up. But a lad did see them and told Absalom, so the two of them departed quickly and came to the house of Bahurim, and who had a well in his courtyard, and they went down into it, and the woman took a covering and spread over it the well's mouth and scattered grain on it, so that nothing was known. So basically what she did, it's just the well was just a hole in the ground. They went and hid in it, and she just put a plank over it and just threw all kinds of grain on it so you wouldn't know it was there. And they hid down it. And the Absalom's servants came to the woman at the house and said, "Where are Ahimaaz and Jonathan?" And the woman said to them, "They have crossed the brook of water." She could be killed for this. There are just many bold women in this book, and she's one of them. And she's just, she could have been put to death for this. And when they searched and could not find them, they returned to Jerusalem. It came about after they departed, they came up out of the well and went to King David. And they said to David, "Arise and cross the water quickly, for thus Ahithophel was counseled against you." Then David and all the people who were with him arose and crossed the Jordan. And by dawn, not even one of them remained who had not crossed the Jordan. What they do is they send counsel saying, "This is what Ahithophel said. Though I think my counsel was taken, guard against this." That's basically what they said. And he does. I mean, he gets out of town by sundown brown. I mean, apparently the river is a barrier that slows everybody down. Now, the Jordan, we think a river, to me it looks like a creek, any picture I ever saw, but it doesn't look like a river. It doesn't look like it would be much. But when you have an army, it's still something you got to stop and go through. Okay. When Ahithophel saw that his counsel was not followed, he saddled his donkey, arose, and went to his home, to his city, and set his house in order, and strangled himself. Thus he died, and was buried in the grave of his father. Because Absalom took the counsel of David's guy, this guy goes and kills himself. He hangs himself. I think apparently because more than, it wasn't so much a pride issue, well, I'm sure that was an issue, but he knew the folly of the information and the advice that was given. He knew it would end in defeat. He knew his information was right. He saw the writing on the wall before anything happened. That's how smart, this guy is smart. He is so smart that when he sees that they listen to the other guy's advice, he goes, "Oh, this isn't going to end well. David's coming back. And of course, when David comes back, he's going to kill me." So what he does is he goes home where he wants to, and he dies at home because he figures it's a done deal already. This guy knows his stuff. Then David came to Mahanaim. That's the town where Saul, this is the town everybody runs to because apparently it's fairly well fortified. And Absalom crossed the Jordan, he and all the men of Israel with him. So Absalom is taking his advice. He is leading this battle. So Absalom set Amasa over the army of Joab. Now Amasa was the son of a man whose name was Ithra the Israelite, who went into Abigail, the daughter of Nasha, the sister of Zariah, Joab's mother. So in other words, that Abigail is David's sister, if you remember. This is Absalom's first cousin. Joab's not there anymore, but his army is. The whole army didn't go with Joab, so he needs to have someone. Absalom needs to have someone be Joab on his side. And apparently he picks a relative that doesn't really work out so well. And Israel and Absalom camped in the land of Gilead. Now when David had come to Mahanaim, Shobi, the son of Naash, of Rabbah, the son of Ammon, and all them people, brought beds, basins, pottery, wheat, barley, flour, parched grain, beans, lentils, parched seeds, honey, curds, sheep, boy, they don't leave anything out, and cheese and cheese of the herd for David and for the people who were with them to eat. For they said, "The people are hungry, weary, and thirsty in the wilderness." So we realize when David leaves to go to this town, this was the town that Saul went to because Saul's allies were there. These are David's, this is David's weakest political link, Saul's people. David doesn't really know what he's getting when he gets there. the place he's running away to, he don't know if they're going to go, come on in, or, you know, hey, Absalom's right behind you, and lock the gates. But this is kind of a beautiful thing. They just come out and just shower him with stuff. I mean, it's not that far of a hike, but they just come and meet every need that they have. They just, all kinds of food. This is good news for David, you know, that these people treat him this well. And we'll go a little further, because it gets cool. Then David numbered the people who were with him and set over them commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds. This numbering is done for military purposes. This isn't the numbering that's done at the end of this book where David gets in deep doo-doo over numbering the people out of sources of pride, either for taxes or for military purpose, and where Joab said to him, don't do that, David. You know, why would you do that? This is a different numbering. This is numbering because he wants to set commanders. He needs divisions. He needs order. So what they're saying is David put order to his people. Military order is what he's doing. David sent the people out, one-third under the command of Joab, one-third under the command of Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, Joab's brother, and one-third under of Attaiah the Gittite. Remember, Attaiah was the one who David said, hey, he's a Philistine. He said, David said to him, you know, why don't you go ahead and go? You don't need this trouble. You just got here. You don't have a horse in this race. Why don't you go back and serve Absalom? And Attaiah said, no, if we die, we die, but I'm staying with you. This is where David rewards him and makes him over one-third of the army. And the king said to the people, I myself will surely go out with you also. But the people said, you shall not go out, for if indeed we flee, they will not care about us. Even if half of us die, they will not care about us. But you are worth 10,000 of us. Therefore, now, it's better that you be ready to help us from the city. So what the people say is, no, you're not coming out to fight the fight. You stay behind the walls. The king said to them, whatever seems best to you, I will do. So the king stood beside the gate, and all the people went up by hundreds and thousands. The king charged Joab and Ishiah and Attaiah, saying, deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom. And all the people heard when the king charged all the commanders concerning Absalom. So David says in public, what he's saying is, don't kill my son. Go fight the battle, but don't kill my son. And everybody hears him say it. It wasn't done in secret. Then the people went onto the fields against Israel, and the battle took place in the forest of Ephraim. Apparently this is a deep, dark forest, very tough terrain, you know, cliffs, pits, just a treacherous area. And the people of Israel were defeated there before the servants of David, and they slaughtered there was great with 20,000 men. These were men that had been loyal to David just a couple days ago. David just killed 20,000 of his own people. For the battle there was spread over the whole countryside, and the forest devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. As always, when God intervenes, God intervenes. Now Absalom happened to meet the servants of David, for Absalom was riding on his mule, and the mule went under the thick branches of a great oak, and his head caught fast in the oak, so he was left hanging between heaven and earth, while the mule under him kept going. The traditional thought is that this is Absalom's hair. Remember that all that was said about his hair was 3 pounds of hair every time he cut it? It was his pride that his hair got tangled up into the branches of an oak tree, which left him hanging, well, defenseless. So he's left hanging there. When a certain man saw it, he told Joab and said, behold, I saw Absalom hanging an oak tree. Joab said to the man who had told him, now, behold, you saw him. Why didn't you strike him there to the ground? And I would have given you 10 pieces of silver and a belt. The man said to Joab, even if I should receive 1,000 pieces of silver in my hand, I would not put my hand against the king's son. For in our hearing, the king charged you, Abishai, and Attaiah, saying, protect for me the young man Absalom. So Joab says, why didn't you kill him? If you'd have killed him, I'd have given you some money. And the dude said, I heard the king say, don't kill him. I don't care how much money you got. I'm not doing it. Joab being Joab. Anyway, he says, otherwise, if I had dealt treacherously against his life, and there is nothing hidden from the king, then you yourself would have stood aloof. So what he's saying is, you would have killed me for killing him. Now you're telling me you would have, you know, yeah. So apparently he knows what's going on. Joab says, I will not waste time here with you. In other words, I'm not going to listen to your truth. Your truth is annoying me. So he took three spears in his hand and thrust them through the heart of Absalom while he was yet alive in the midst of the oak. Joab was told specifically, do not kill Absalom. Joab was told specifically, do not kill Abner. There was another one, I can't remember who it was, where Joab was told specifically, don't kill him, and Joab did it. Joab is running amok. Joab is a problem. Joab said, and 10 young men who carried Joab's armor gathered around and struck Absalom and killed him. So it became a stab fest. Everybody's running them through. Then Joab blew the trumpet, and the people returned from pursuing Israel, and for Joab restrained the people. So I understand why Joab did it, to say that the battle's over. And it says Joab restrained the people. What he restrained them from was from killing each other. Joab's a general. He needs all those people. All those people that David's army is killing, they're his army. Stop killing them. I need them. And I guess tact and tactics, he did the right thing. But he was told not to do this. Okay. They took Absalom and cast him to a deep pit in the forest and erected over him a very great heap of stones. And all of Israel fled, each to his tent. Now, Absalom in his lifetime had, by the way, this is son number three, had taken and set up for himself a pillar, which is in the king's valley, for he said, I have no son to preserve my name. If you remember back in chapter 14, he had three sons and a daughter. Apparently, his three sons had all died. Remember, he had a daughter he named Tamar after his sister, and he had three sons. Apparently, they're all dead. So because he has no sons to carry on his name, he had made an, what they're saying is, he made a monument to himself. Anyway, so he named the pillar after his own name, and it's called Absalom's Monument to this day. And I think they still know where this is. I mean, this is still pointed out as, this is it. It's still there. You know, they still know where this thing is. When Amahiah, the son of Zadok, said, please let me run and bring the news, the king news that the Lord has freed him from the hand of his enemies. But Joab said to him, you're not a man to carry news this day. But you shall carry news another day. However, you shall carry no news today because the king's son is dead. He doesn't want him telling David because he knows that Joab shouldn't have done it. He wants the news to come from somebody who will say it in a way that he wants it said. Joab said to the Cushite, that's all it says is a Cushite. Cush is south of Egypt. With Ethiopia, I guess would be today, Cush. So he's there. This Cushite is there with him. Go tell the king that you have what you have seen. So the Cushite bowed to Joab and ran. Now Amahiah, the son of Zadok, said once more to Joab, but whatever happens, please let me also run after the Cushite. And Joab said, why would you run, my son, since you have no reward for going? But whatever happens, he said to him, I will run. So he's saying, I don't care. I'm going anyway. So he said to him, then go ahead, run. Then Amahiah ran by the way of the plain and passed up the Cushite. By the way, Ethiopians and Kenyans are known for their distance running, and this Jew passed them, okay? Now David was sitting between the two gates, and the watchman went out the roof of the gate by the wall and raised his eyes, and looked, and behold, a man was running by himself. The watchman called and told the king. The king said, if he is running by himself, there's good news in his mouth. In other words, what he's saying is, if the whole army ain't running back, it's a good thing. And he came nearer and nearer, and the watchman saw another man running. And the watchman said to the gatekeeper, he said, behold, another man is running by himself. This would be the Cushite behind him. And he said, this one also brings good news. The watchman said, I think the running of the first one is like the running of Amahiah, the son of Zadok. So apparently this kid is fast, and everybody knows it, because he runs like him. This would be about as easy to watch me run and say, he runs like Jeff. Yeah. David would have died of old age before he got the news. This is good. Okay. Amahiah called and said to the king, all is well. Then he prostrated himself before the king with his face to the ground, and he said, blessed is the Lord your God who has delivered up the men who lifted up their hand against my lord. And the king, in other words, we won. The king said, is it well with the young man Absalom? And Amahiah answered, when Joab sent the king's servants and your servant, I saw a great tumult, but I did not know what it was. The king said, turn aside and stand here. What he says is, I don't know. That's what he says. Yeah, something was going on. I don't know what it was. He don't want to tell him. This is what he ran to tell him, but I guess just because he knows what it's going to do to David's heart, he just, you know, puts off the inevitable. And the king said, turn aside and stand here. So he turned aside and stood still. Behold, the Cushite arrived. And the Cushite said, let the Lord the king receive good news, for the Lord has freed you this day from the hand of those who rose up against you. And the king said to the Cushite, is it well with the young man Absalom? The Cushite answered, let the enemies of the Lord and the king who all rise up against you for evil be as that young man. See, the Cushite doesn't know David. He doesn't have anything invested in this. And he just goes up and says, oh, he's dead. The king was deeply moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And thus he said, as he walked, oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would I have died instead of you? Oh, Absalom, my son, my son. Quite a horrible thing for David. You guys want to stop or you, it's up to you guys. Yeah, it's about, yeah, we'll pick up here. It's interesting because David, as this goes on a little bit, Joab gets involved again, and it's read on ahead a little bit because it's kind of cool. David is so overpowered by the loss of his son that Joab becomes mad with him. Listen, these guys went out and fought for you, and you're out, you're in the palace crying. You're not out here, you know, cheering your men on. You're in mourning. These guys fought for you. So he forces sort of David to go out and to stand at the gate and welcome her, which was really the right thing to do. And he goes, you know, you're going to lose these guys. You know, they're about ready to leave you just because you're acting like they did something wrong. And they're not happy. And he talks them into it. But David is so upset with Joab that he replaces him with another general. And one from the north. I believe it's one from Israel itself, not from Judah. Because he's trying to make, well, first he's really ticked at Joab because this is the third time or second or third time that Joab killed somebody he was supposed to kill. And Joab kills him. Joab kills that general. So, in the end, you could see why as he's dying, he says to Solomon, kill Joab too. Because he doesn't want his son. Well, it becomes easier because Joab takes sides against Solomon. But he doesn't want his son to have the burden of Joab that he had. And remember, they're all family. You know, Joab is family. And it's just, it's a pretty brutal. It says, sword will never leave your house. It never did. It's just constant, never ending. So this is what I waited for? You know, be careful what you ask for. And it's all his doing. And everything that Nathan said is coming true. And he is still the greatest king that Israel ever had. He is still a man after the heart of the Lord. The Lord says it continuously. David's heart is the heart I want my people to have. So once again, I ask you to look at yourselves and say, if David was capable of doing these things, committing adultery and murdering a man to cover it up, what are we capable of? Never, never think yourself, just because you have an opportunity doesn't mean you won't do it. So when you go to the New Testament scriptures that says, which quote the Old Testament from Romans, it says, oh, the heart is more deceitful than all else. No one is good. No, not one. Every one of us is vile. No one does good. No one truly wants to. That isn't poetry. It's us. It's me. It's the truth. That's why we're here, to get that fixed. To notice it. To start to hate it, and to not to want it anymore. Because remember, I've said this a lot, the goal and the purpose of this is to change what you want. You will always pursue what you want. It's very simple, what your will is. God is changing what we want by letting us have it. We have free reign. He doesn't cause us, that's why James says, "Do not." God causes no man to sin. He tempts no one. We don't need to. We do this ourselves. All he had to do was give us free will, and we're off to the races. And so when you look at David, and you look at his failures, and you look at all the trouble that comes from it, it is easy to cast stones at David, but what I say is, he was the best man in the country, and that's what he did. What would any of us done? Because power doesn't corrupt anything. Power reveals the corruption that was always there. That was always in David's heart. It didn't just show up. It's his nature. It's what must die. That's what the New Testament calls the flesh, the old man. Yeah, it has those names for it. He says, and it must die. I put the flesh to death daily, Paul says. Because if you don't, you'll do stuff like this.